The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Earnings season looks pretty good. Draghi spooks the Eurozone. Gold tops 1250. And our guest, Ross Cameron from Warrior Trading, discusses how to be a successful day trader. All this and much more on episode number 518 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hi, Andrew Horowitz here, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast, where we come each and every week to talk about finance and money and markets and investments and opportunities and taxes and all sorts of things related to your future stability and security. Hopefully learning a few things along the way. I know I do. I know that all the various guests that we bring on board is something that I really, I look forward to each and every week to learn a little bit more about what's going on with the markets, what's going on with investments and really get a more in-depth look at what's happening around the world. I think it makes me better at what I do, and hopefully it does the same for you. So here we are. It's towards the end of July, coming into the last week of July. Market's doing pretty well. As a matter of fact, the continuation of, I guess we can call it the Teflon market, where nothing seems to stick except for the good news. It's a good news Teflon market, or maybe one of those copper plated markets. You know, I see those commercials, those infomercials on the copper plated pots out there that seems nothing sticks to it. Well, none of the bad news seems to stick to these markets. And everybody's looking forward to the fact that, you know, long term things are going to be good. And we're going to see good earnings, which we have been seeing, which we're going to talk about. And we're going to see that it's going to be some tax benefits and relief and reform and cuts coming along. And even though we've seen these problems with the healthcare issue that was for a while there, creating some kind of concern and worry for the markets that there would be a elongated period until we got some kind of tax reform, which is playing out. But as we go through time, it seems like the carrot keeps on keeping these investors and buyers very excited about the future. And we did see, let's talk about for a moment earnings, because I think it's pretty interesting. Where are we? Maybe about a third of the way through the, maybe even less than that, maybe about 20%, I would say, about through the earnings season so far for the S&P 500. And we've seen that approximately 77% have top sales projections and 73% of stocks that have already reported have beaten earnings per share forecast. Now, that's pretty good. There's obviously an earnings-driven economy, a market climate that we can be looking at right now. But I think the most important thing there with what we've seen here is that we're seeing a much better number of beats on the top line. And that's something we had worried about for some time, if you remember. Because we were seeing that, you know, the earnings were coming in pretty good for the last several quarters, and especially last quarter where we saw pretty good growth. And that was questioned by the masses saying, well, these are really good and we're good with that and we'll bid stocks higher. But the question is, what about the quality of those earnings? The earnings were based on a lot fewer shares outstanding because of buybacks. And, you know, is this something we could really rely on? And maybe we should be shifting over to a number that can't be tampered with as much, which would be sales or revenues. Those are the numbers that we want to maybe look at. And we're seeing that companies are doing a great job at broadening their ability to bring in more sales. That's good. And for that, stocks are being rewarded. We're seeing that we're close to all-time highs again on all three major indices, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, and the NASDAQ. So that's pretty good. They hit a record high during the week, came down a little bit towards the end of the week, but overall, I think there's a lot of optimism continuing into this earnings season with the fact that there are some advantages of less regulation and maybe a more favorable climate for U.S. companies. We also saw in the latest reading for construction activity that housing starts rose about 8.5% last month and building permits were up about 7.5%. So we could think that the slower readings that we saw on those numbers were maybe a little transitory or maybe just a bit of an aberration last month. Now, the NAHB number in terms of builders' confidence came down a little bit. I think it was at 74, I believe, down from about 77. Not a big deal, but we are seeing that confidence is coming down a little bit for builders, and maybe that's due to the fact that they're concerned about the Fed and the rate hiking that is going to be moving forward. And, you know, we'll see. Right now, it does look like that the construction activity, building activity, home buying activity is pretty strong and is continuing to really not be affected by much. Confidence is up. So all that's really good. Really not too much to, I guess there's just not too much to worry about right now. And that's what's continuing to help create the underlying sentiment that, you know what, we're not going to go into a recession at least this quarter, maybe even next quarter. I'm not saying we're going to have a recession. I'm just saying that when you look forward and what to worry about, there's just nothing there that really signals a slowdown in any areas of the economy here, domestically or internationally. Really, there's nothing happening around the world that would signify that we're going to see a slowdown. Even with rates coming higher in the United States, we're not seeing anything that really would be worrisome right now. So I think that's really what's happening. Combined with the earnings, combined with the low interest rates, and combined with the fact that central banks are continuing to be very accommodative, somewhat dovish. We'll talk about the ECB in a moment. But, you know, when you look at that and you combine that finally with the fact that there is a small growing chorus of commentary around the world about taxes and reducing taxes, not only here in the U.S., but we're seeing this from other governments talking about that as well, about doing something about the taxes in their various countries. So deficit spending is not going to be a concern, it looks like. And while some on the other side may say, wait a minute, we have massive amounts of government debt owned by the central banks, we're seeing that the lending standards are getting a little bit softer again. We're seeing, of course, this massive problem in the subprime auto area. And at the same time, it looks like we're going to go into hock from a government standpoint and a central bank standpoint. And oh my gosh, what a real big worry, what a real big concern. But I don't think investors are saying that, well, that's not going to be a problem anytime soon. Let's ride this thing. Let's ride this wave. And when it breaks, all right, we'll step off of it. And that's continuing to bring a bid to investments. And then finally, I think when you look at things like the areas that concern central banks and when they'd start really moving interest rates higher, it would be substantial growth, wage growth, and inflation. Not seeing any of that, except for the price of avocados. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see I posted a price of an avocado. It was in the fresh market this weekend, and I happened to be looking for some avocados, and I saw them, and I'm like, oh, $2.99. I'm thinking $2.99 maybe a pound? $2.99 maybe for, I don't know, I had to look at the sign. I looked at the sign and said, $2.99 each. $2.99 per avocado. And that was for the, quote, regular avocados. The organic avocados were $5.99 each. So we're definitely seeing avocadoflation, as I call it. So there are areas that we are seeing some food inflation, but it's very refined. It's in certain areas of inflation, like insurance, but not in fuel, not in commodity prices, and not for the most part anywhere else are we seeing anything that is really going to be a concern by the standards of central banks to really start throwing in the towel and raising interest rates in a very, very quick manner. Now, I will share with you that I read the Epsilon Theory, Ben Hunt's piece that he puts out each, I guess about each week. And he talked about how inflation could start picking up with increases in rates. So as the Fed starts increasing, he gives a whole reason why, we could see inflation actually start rising. And what they would do to combat that is, of course, raise rates even more, which would then help to raise inflation more, which would then help to cause them and require them to raise rates more. And the cycle would just get out of control to a point that we would see the inflation that we all have been thinking about should be there due to all the things that central banks have been doing. In other words, all of the central bank buying and keeping down rates has actually been deflationary in his thought process. And about 2 years ago, we wrote a piece on this in our quarterly newsletter at Horowitz & Company. And I said that, you know, one of the things you look at is the velocity of money, and we are not seeing it. If we see interest rates start to move higher, it could create a panic by people waiting to do things. In other words, deflation is caused by people sitting on the fence waiting for prices to go lower. And you get into a deflationary spiral where people hold off doing things because they think the prices will be lower in the future. If you cause and force prices to go up, or rates to go up in this case, and force people's hands saying, you know, it's only going to be higher in the future, they'll be forced to do something. And as such, that could bring around inflation and, of course, increase the velocity of money. Anyway, interesting piece. If you haven't seen it, I would encourage you to go over to Epsilon Theory. Just look it up on the web or search for it on the DisciplinedInvestor.com site. You'll see Ben Hunt and how to get your free copy of this particularly good and well-written newsletter. We're going to get to our guest in a second. When we get back, talk about some of the earnings that are coming up. I'll mention you can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. Of course, if you want my audio book, you can go over to Amazon, look up The Disciplined Investor, The Essential Guide. You can get that on audiobook as well as paperback. And let's see, what else I was going to mention. I've got a lot of interest in Aero recently, our algorithmic trade. Check that out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. All the different strategies that we offer. I think it's kind of time, if you've been just sitting on your money and wondering, hey, maybe it's time to change my investment strategy. Check it out. And our guest today is Ross Cameron, and he's a day trader, actually, or a teacher, or we'll talk about that but a bit. He founded Warrior Trading back in 2012 as a live trading chat room for education and idea generation. Basically wanted to create a community, and he's been teaching day trading and focusing on risk management and stock selection, entry points, exit points, all that. Hey, Ross, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, we haven't talked before, and I try to do a little bit of an analysis of, you know, who I'm talking to before we actually get on, you know, just to understand a little bit more about you, not only from the aspect of your business, but I was really kind of fascinated real quick on, you know, in your information, about us, it says that in your free time, you enjoy sailing. Okay, I get that. I could go with that.
Yeah.
Gardening, which, okay, I see that more of a chore.
Okay.
And fixing vintage Mercedes diesel engines. Now, what is that about?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, one of the things that I got into back in, I guess it was 2013 or 2014, one of my friends had a 1985 turbo diesel Mercedes for sale, and it wasn't running. He said, "I want someone just to take it off my hands." And I looked at it and I was like, "That car looks very cool." And I knew a lot of people being in Vermont, there's a lot of people that run their diesel engines on veggie oil. And so one of the names of your show is TDI. And so when I think of that, I think of turbo diesel,
right?
The TDI engines. Right. And so I was like, oh yeah, immediately I'm thinking of diesel. And so a lot of people will do that with VW engines. Mercedes engines are also really popular because those engines in the 80s, you could run them on almost anything. You could run them on peanut oil. You could run them on any kind of old cooking oil. You just filter it. And so I bought this car and I started tinkering with it in my free time. And I sort of figured this would be like me taking a course in auto mechanics. So I replaced all the brake system. I replaced a bunch of parts in the engine. And it just ended up being something that when I was finished trading at the end of the day, I really looked forward to going and kind of tinkering on the car. And for me, the similarity that I noticed is that very small adjustments with like valve adjustments and things like that and the way a diesel engine runs can make a huge difference. And similarly, as a trader, these really small adjustments in your metrics, you know, your profit loss ratio, your amount, the amount of risk you take, can make such a huge difference over the long term. You know, and so it's, you know, with like an engine, it's all about repetition. So when you're repeating, you know, this movement again and again and again, and it's just a little bit off, it starts to cause this early wear. It starts to cause problems. And it's the same with your trading. If you're consistently making these mistakes again and again and again and again, all those losses add up. And that can be the difference between being a profitable trader and being, you know, a failed trader. Well, so
that was a good segue. That wasn't planned, by the way. So that was a really good segue into that.
Well, I've thought about this more than once.
And by the way, you can find more information about him. I didn't mention this before at warriortrading.com. Now, listen, you started doing this in 2012. So I don't want to put a particular age on myself, but let me just say that I've been doing the area of trading for a very long time. There's been a lot of changes. I mean, I remember when there was quarter spreads. I remember when it was like taking candy from a baby, you know, doing kind of day trading. And it's changed a lot over the last number of years, and especially over the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years with the lack of volatility, even though there is some individual name volatility, with the idea that everybody just buys everything and doesn't matter how crappy the earnings come out, you know, maybe one day here or there, but, you know, give it enough time. I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the basics, because we've had other friends of mine on, people I know in the business and other people that are experts in the area of trading and day trading. I want to start with, you know, what is the right person, and this is a big question, but what's the right person that should even be considering, even thinking about the idea of getting involved in day trading?
That's a great question. You know, day trading, obviously, it takes the type of person that is willing to expose themselves to a little bit of risk. It's not a low-risk investment strategy by any means. And it also requires someone who's able to make very quick decisions. Now, having worked with thousands of students over the years, I have found that different types of personalities are more apt to prefer different types of trading strategies. So The strategy that you choose is very likely going to be tied to the type of personality you have. Personalities of people that like to get in very quickly, make like scalp trading, and that's to take, you know, 10, 15, 20 cent profits. Those quick trades, those are people who feel almost afraid of having big losses. So they like to go in, get in real quick, take their profit, and then get out real quick. Whereas people who are a little bit more careful and a little bit more thoughtful, they're not as good at making really quick scalp decisions and quick, you know, taking quick trades. And so they're more apt to go for more trend-based trades where they take a position often reversal trades, where they buy a very weak stock or short a very strong stock and hold it for a longer period of time. They prefer a more analytical approach. So the type of strategy for day trading, I mean, yes, as a day trader in general, you have to be more willing to take risk. But even within that segment, there are different strategies for different levels of risk.
So let me just back you up, though. Let's start with this question. I think that probably was the precursor to what we're talking about here. What is a day trader?
Right. So a day trader is someone who buys and sells shares of stocks intraday. And so what do day traders look for? We look for volatility. We need to see stocks moving. We don't buy a stock at $5 to sell it at $5. Mm-hmm. We buy it at $5 to sell it at $5.50 and make 10%.
Right.
So we look for stocks that are making big intraday moves. And that right there was the biggest discovery that I made as a beginner trader going through all the trial and error, was realizing that every single day there's a stock that moves 20 to 30% mm-hmm. or more. So our job as day traders is to look for those stocks each day that are making big moves. So we're not going to trade, you know, on a daily basis. Generally, most traders that I know aren't going to be trading Facebook or, you know, or Apple or stocks like that. Right. We're looking for stocks that are volatile. So a stock that last night, so here's the question. What creates volatility, right? Why is a stock going to move 20% today or tomorrow. Most likely it's because of some type of catalyst, some type of event. So for biotech stocks, pharmaceutical stocks, those can be like FDA trials, clinical trial results. For other stocks, or probably any stock, it could be quarterly earnings, things like that. So we kind of have this process of how do we find stocks each day that are likely to make 20 to 30% moves or even higher. And so people will ask me, well, which comes first? What do you look for first, the stocks that have news today or the stocks that are starting to move? And the reality is there are thousands of headlines coming out every single day, all day long. If you have a streaming news feed, you'll see even in the middle of the night headlines coming out. So just because a stock has news doesn't necessarily mean that traders care. So what I look for is the stocks that have already started to move. I look for the stocks that are up between 5 and 10%, and then I filter them to see, okay, does this stock have a catalyst? Is it just up for some unknown reason, or does it have an actual reason? And if it has an actual reason and I see that it's already up, then I start to think, okay, does this stock have the potential to continue the move up to 20, 30, or 40% potentially? And can I capture some of that move? And so that's my job each day, to find that small handful of stocks. It's usually three or four. And then I just do it again and again and again, looking for those small opportunities.
Is there any particular price range of a stock that you are looking for that you consider the sweet spot?
Well, I would say it sort of depends on your account size. For traders with small accounts, which is what I was when I started trading, you can leverage yourself more aggressively on stocks between usually $250 and $10, under $20 for sure. Stocks that are more expensive, you don't usually see a 40% move on, you know, a $50 or $60 stock, but you see them almost weekly on stocks below $10. So it sort of depends. At the same time, if you have a $500,000 account and you want to day trade with it, you can't buy $500,000 worth of stock that's priced at $250. I mean, that's just absurd. It's too much size. But you could with Tesla, right? So then you're going to look at the higher priced stocks because Tesla might move 4 or 5 points. And now with 2,000 shares and 600,000 in the market, you could look at a $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, or $8,000 winner on that type of move. So that really depends on account size.
So the daily routine I get, you know, so you're looking for things moving throughout the day, and you have some kind of a screening system that shows you the top movers, I assume, or things that are starting to move. And maybe I know what platform do you use? What platforms do you prefer?
I use Trade Ideas. I've worked closely with Dan Merkin. He's the CEO of Trade Ideas. They are fantastic. Now, if you use E-Trade Pro, the strategy scanner built into E-Trade is powered by Trade Ideas. And that's when I first was introduced to them, using E-Trade back in, I don't know, 2012 or something like that, as a beginner trader. So using E-Trade, I started using the strategy scanner, and then I just went straight to Trade Ideas, and I use their desktop version. So it allows me to scan the entire market for stocks that meet my criteria for being in play. And so I would generally say on any given morning, I'm looking for stocks gapping up between 5 and 10%, priced between $250 and $10. And I look for stocks with a float under 100 million shares, and I prefer under 20 million because this comes back to that simple supply and demand equation. If you have a stock that has a limited number of shares available to trade, which is the float, and you have high demand, you're more likely to see a big movement in price. So,
what is Trade Ideas? Is it a trading platform or just an idea platform?
Just idea generation.
Oh, I got you.
It's a scanner. Stock scanning.
It's a stock scanner. Yeah, stock scanner. Yep. Gotcha. And it's real time.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. You could build some of these things. I mean, for example, we use TradeStation and we write a lot of algos and we write a lot of plugins for TradeStation. These are things that you could, in theory, write on your own as well, if you have the formulas down. Just that. Do you use any news services or any specific? I mean, you have your own chat room per se, which I want to get to in a second about.
I have the chat room, and we have a news feed that plugs right into the chat room. So that gets the breaking headlines, the news, and stuff like that right into the. But then I also use Benzinga as a premium news feed. And what I like about Benzinga is that they have the squawk box. So they have the guy, you know, right over the mic telling you, it's like a streaming internet radio telling you what's happening. Oh, this stock has takeover chatter. Oh, this stock just reported something. So that can give you some really good midday opportunities. All of a sudden in the middle of the day, you know, you find out some big news about some company and they drop 10 or 15%. So that's, again, part of thing for that catalyst. And sometimes they come out of the day.
I mean, I like Benzinga. As a matter of fact, a good buddy of mine started Benzinga, Jason Rasnick.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yep. They're fantastic.
Known him for a long time. Now you mentioned you know, this discussion about float and catalysts and high volume and all that. The next point is obviously sizing, which we talked about, risk issues that you're dealing with. Now, when you find those, let's make up a scenario here. You find something, you're like, oh, that looks good, and you're in the chat room, and you obviously have some premium chat rooms and things like that. Hey, you know, look at this stock, or somebody else says that, or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
What is the effect of a chat room on the price of a stock? Do you follow what I'm saying here? So you know, you could really have just a promotional aspect, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but a promotional aspect of the actual price of the stock, maybe because of all these traders that are doing it are pushing it together versus, you know, really what was going on. In other words, you could be the real catalyst in this.
You could be. And one of the things that's important is to filter based on volume. So I look for stocks, generally speaking, that have volume over 1 million shares. If I look at my metrics for the last 6 months, for all of 2017, the majority of my profits came from stocks that had between 1 million and 5 million shares of volume.
On a day.
Yeah, mm-hmm, daily volume. Mm-hmm. So I focus on stocks that are more liquid. Now, if you're trading a stock with 50,000 shares of volume, that could be a problem because it's just not liquid enough for a lot of people to buy. But the reality is traders look for the action. They look for the volatility. They look for the opportunity. So if a stock starts popping up, you know, XYZ starts popping up, and suddenly, you know, our chat room plus 30 other chat rooms all say, oh my gosh, this stock XYZ is hitting my scanner. And those people all look for the catalyst. Well, I don't see news. I don't know what's going on, but it's up 15% and it's still going up. And now they start buying and the fear of missing out kicks in and more people start buying. Then, you know, you could say, well, all these people in these chat rooms all around the world started buying the stock. So it went up. There was no catalyst. But next thing you know, it's up 50% or 60%. Mm-hmm. And now short sellers are starting to cover. And that's kind of the thing that I never really understand, because I usually look for a catalyst. And so when a stock is just squeezing up with no catalyst, I'm always a little bit unsure about it. You know, what's causing this? Is it maybe some chat room out there that I don't know about that alerted this stock? Or is it, you know, a Jim Cramer putting out a trade alert on the stock? And so people follow him. You know, people will follow other investors, Warren Buffett, whoever, Carl Icahn. When Carl Icahn says, I just shorted Apple or I bought Apple or whatever it is, suddenly the stock moves 5%. Mm-hmm. So that can be a catalyst. I think the most important thing is that you understand what's driving the stock. So if you know that there is fundamental news like earnings, you know, FDA announcements or something like that, then you can understand that there's a reason why thousands of traders all around the world or, you know, hundreds of different chat rooms are watching this stock. You know, there's something more going on than, you know, someone alerted it and now people are following him or something like that. Yep. You know, that's something that I actively discourage our members from doing. Now, there's a lot of services out there that are based on I call out a trade and you follow me. Mm-hmm. There's even services where you can simply click the buy button to actually mirror every single trade they do. Mm-hmm. And I've been really against that because the reality is when I tried doing that type of thing as a beginner trader, I never made as much money as the person calling out the trade.
Yeah, well, because they got it in before you and then pumped it up.
Yeah, right. So my winners were always smaller, and then my losses were always bigger because I would buy it higher and then I would sell it after them when it was going back down. So I realized that trade alert process is not sustainable. You can't make money at it. And so one of the things when I founded Warrior Trading is that I really wanted to focus on was doing things differently from what everyone else is doing. So instead of doing trade alerts, I wanted to share the reasons why I was getting into a trade so other people could understand. And then if I go away for a month, if I'm traveling, they don't all of a sudden have no ability to make money.
Nervous breakdown. They understand, whoa, my guy's gone.
right. Yeah. They understand this is, well, he was buying this because it was a bull flag, because of this or that. So that focus on education is really important. I mean, inevitably, there might be some people that follow, but I really encourage people to understand why I take the trades. And, you know, that way.
So let me ask you this. What charting platform do you use?
I use eSignal. I used TC2000 for a long time, but I switched over to eSignal. It seems to work a little bit better on my system. I have 11 monitors right now.
Oh, you slacker.
Yeah, only 11. So yeah. I needed a platform that could run. Each monitor has 6 charts on it. So, you know, 6 times 11. I needed a platform that could run very low latency on that many platforms. And
so wait a minute. Why do you have all those charts up there? Let's just take one monitor. Just one monitor with 6 charts or 11 charts.
Six charts on one monitor.
Why do you have 6 charts on one monitor?
Because I'm watching 2 stocks. And on each stock, I have 3 charts. I have the 1 minute, the 5 minute, and the daily chart. So for each monitor, I'm watching 2 stocks.
And you want to see the actual, are you looking for a signal? Like maybe, I'm just making something up here, you know, crossing above a particular level. You're looking at the volume. You're looking at, what are you looking at on each of these?
I'm usually looking for bull flags. Bull flags or pullbacks to moving averages. Now, generally, three of my monitors or 4 of my monitors are on the stocks that are gapping up today. So, you know, that list of 4 or 5 or maybe 10 stocks that are gapping up 5% with a catalyst. So I'll just keep them all on watch and I'll just keep looking from one to the next, kind of like driving a car. You check your mirrors. You see, is there anything going on? No. Okay, I'm good. Next one, next one, next one. And I just keep doing that until I start to see an opportunity. I see a setup. And that, you know, for me, by keeping up those charts, it's hard for me to miss an opportunity because it's happening right in front of me. Now, obviously, information overload, you can only go so far with that, but for me, it seems to work.
The reason why I ask this is that, you know, we use TradeStation, and we use something called the radar screen on TradeStation, which is basically the equivalent of information that you can generate in a Excel spreadsheet, we'll call it, style, in terms of boxes. For example, if it pulled back to a particular line, you get an alert. You know, you can change the color of the field. If it's actually a bull flag and we have a definition of what a blue bull flag is in terms of a script, we can program, hey, bull flag hit. So therefore we only have to have one monitor with like 35 stocks on it.
That's interesting.
You know, that's why I asked you, because I know that's one of the things that we like. You know, on the other hand, I will share with you that still there's something about looking at the left to right look of a chart versus just a number with maybe a color code in this column, yeah. You know, saying, hey, check, you just hit a bull flag, check, you just hit the 50-day moving average, you know, check, right. You know, or something like that. You'd have to look at the chart anyway. I don't know. I do, at least, to kind of see what I take it in, you know?
Right.
It's like looking at a menu at a great hamburger and saying that would be good versus just taking a big bite of it.
Right. Right. You know, one of the things that I struggled with at one point was the fact that with trade ideas, you're getting so many alerts. If you have open filters on your alerts, you can get an alert every minute. And you can kind of get to a point where you start ignoring them because there's just so many coming through. You can't pick up all of them and then you start missing good opportunities. So right. I've created audio alerts for specific types of setups that I like a lot. I color code things that I think are more important with yellow because it draws my eye back to the screen. So, you know, that the system that you're describing on TradeStation, it does sound interesting. It might be something I would want to test out. I like having the visual of the charts, but it does take up a lot of monitor real estate.
A lot of monitor. I can't imagine your electric bill, but hopefully it's good.
Yeah.
But then again, you could probably run them all off a diesel engine.
Actually, that's funny you say that because I lost power. Well, you're kidding, but it's actually true. I lost power at one point this winter. You know, there was a storm. And so I ran an extension cord down to my car. It's a diesel engine, turned on the engine, and just ran the car in the driveway and powered my whole trading station, my monitors, my computers, and my internet router on the car for, you know, a couple hours while I was trading.
That's dedication. I mean, you couldn't.
That's dedication.
I mean, God forbid you'd stop trading for a few hours.
Right. Well, I couldn't possibly.
No, I mean, you had to run a cord out to your car. That's impressive.
Yeah.
So the we talked about the bull flag. We talked about pulling back to an average of sort. Do you think do things like ascending triangles or, you know, island reversals or I don't know, you could name 100 of these things, MACD or some of these oscillators and things like that?
I don't use a lot of oscillators. I did in the past. I kind of got into this indicator overload and, you know, I was trying to find that perfect holy grail combination of indicators that I think a lot of beginner traders can look for. You know, is it combining RSI with MACD and stochastics and a couple other things? And I ended up finding that I was getting a lot of false positives. You know, I would, all these indicators would confirm each other because they're all oscillators. So they're all kind of looking for the same thing. I would take the trade. I wasn't consistent. And so what I ended up doing is taking all of those indicators off my charts.
Yeah.
The only thing that I use are exponential moving averages, obviously candlestick charts and volume bars. And I just keep it simple. That's kind of my approach, is keep it simple, focus on the patterns. And one of the things that I'm doing is I'm trading stocks that have high relative volume. And like I said, for my all of 2017, the majority of my gains are on stocks over 1 million shares of volume and stocks with 5 times relative volume or higher. So why would a stock have 5 times relative volume? It's because there's some type of catalyst. There's something going on with it. And that means when you have these really common chart patterns forming, whether it's an ascending wedge or a bull flag or a flat top breakout, there are that many more traders who have their eyes on that chart. And sure, some of them might be looking at RSI or MACD or things like that, but the majority are simply waiting for that first candle to make a new high, the apex point of that pattern, to break. And so that becomes the logical place to buy. And that's what I like to do. I like to buy at the logical place where I think thousands and thousands of other traders would also be looking to either buy or cover their short position if they're on the other side of the trade.
Now, let me ask you the million, quadrillion, quatrillion dollar question.
Okay.
How do you figure out when to get out of the trade? In other words, two ways, right? There's 2 points that you will exit a trade. There's only 2 points. One is when it's too painful and you were wrong. Mm-hmm. And the second is you were right and that's it. Enough. How do you determine your stops and exit points?
That's a great question. And that's definitely something that every trader has to figure out. What I do, and this has always been my tendency, I've always had a tendency of selling too soon. So my winners were always small and my losers would end up being bigger because I'd hold the losers too long. That's a really common pattern for traders. And it was always the case for me. So what I train myself to do is when I have that instinct to take some profit off the table, you know, I'm up 10 cents with 4,000 shares and I'm like, I'm up $400. I got to sell some. I no longer sell the whole thing. I only sell half. I sell half my position. Mm-hmm. So once I sell half my position, and it's usually, if I'm buying at an apex point, like I'm buying for a flat top breakout, I'm buying an ascending wedge or whatever it is, I expect that when I get in, I'm getting in at the place that everyone else recognizes is the right entry. You know, if I'm really timed properly, we'll see increasing volume on that first candle to resolve on the pattern. Mm-hmm. So if I'm right and I get into the right spot, I'll be up 15 to 20 cents within 5 minutes of taking the trade, typically. And that's when I'll sell half. I'll sell half, and then I adjust my stop to break even on the rest. And that way, if it ends up reversing, it's a false breakout, I'll stop out flat on the balance, but I still made a little money. If it ends up going further, I'll sell another quarter at the next resistance point, usually a half dollar or a whole dollar, you know, $6.50, $7, $7.50,
$8. Hold it. Back up. Mm-hmm. $7.50. You'll put a stop in at or a limit in order to sell at $7.50. As an example.
749. Sure.
Yeah. Just check. That's an important distinction right there, because I've always talked for the last 10 years that you never put a stop in a round number.
I will sell for profit at those half dollars or whole dollars. So as we come up to them, I look for either a break over that level or a tap to that level. So those are the places that I usually would look to take profit if a stock is getting really extended.
Right. Okay. Because on the stop side, which is when it's going against you,
yeah,
I always tell people, do not use round numbers.
Right, because of the flush through that level, the stop hunting and things like that.
Yep, exactly. It's just everybody, right. Because all the amateurs are using those levels. You know, I'm going to sell right. this thing. If I bought it at $7.10. If it goes below $7, I'm out. By the time that $7 hits, you're at $7.80, you know, $6.85.
Exactly, right. Right. So in that case, that's kind of the struggle is that what's the proper stop? Is the proper stop 680? Do you give it more room so you don't get flushed out if it drops below the whole dollar and then pops back up? Or do you want to stop above that, which would be at like 702 or 703? For me, I want to keep a tight stop.
Right.
So rather than getting flushed out, I would stop at 703 or 702
right.
as I see it coming down to that level.
Yeah, no, usually. Definitely if it's coming down there, I agree with you. And then I guess the other thing is that, you know, since you started doing the warrior trading over the last, you know, since you've been doing the educational part of it and all that, which is, you know, it's been 3-4 years. Have you noticed any changes in the game?
I would say a little bit. I mean, that's a vague answer, but I have seen some changes. My success in general with my trading has been fairly consistent. So that either means I'm adapting to the changes or we haven't seen a lot of changes. I'm not sure mm-hmm. which it means, but, yes, we've seen some changes. The 5-cent tick pilot program for sure has been a change that started in the fall. So that minimum 5-cent spread on, what is it, like 1,500 stocks or something like that, 1,200 stocks, that has had an impact because I personally don't like to trade the stocks with the 5-cent tick because they actually have less volatility. And that means there's less opportunity for profit. I think that may have been one of the plans for the 5-cent tick pilot program. I think the other was that it would bring more traders into the market. And I don't know that that's happened, but for me, I avoid those. So that's 1200 fewer stocks that I could trade on any given day. So I think that's at maybe the least made it so there's just not as many good opportunities
yeah.
and had to be a little bit more selective about, you know, what I'm willing to trade. And that also means that with fewer opportunities, I have to make the most of each opportunity
mm-hmm, naturally.
That sets itself up. So yeah. I've got to be a little more aggressive with my share size. So
do you also short, by the way?
Not really. I short a little bit, but I'm predominantly a long bias trader. And that's the way I easily see the market. I have always sort of said that I think of this as like being lefty or righty. You sort of naturally see it one way or the other. Some people can do both, and I give them a lot of credit for that. But I'm not really good at that. I'm really better on the long side. And I guess the good thing about that is a lot of our students are trading in IRAs, retirement accounts. They can't short stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them with small accounts can't afford to open multiple brokerage accounts to get shares available to borrow. So it seems that it's more popular for our beginner traders and our students to start with a long bias strategy and then branch out to short selling if they want to. So I think that it maybe well, is just a nice coincidence.
The other thing I'll mention to you is because I do study this all the time also, you know, in the practice of my business and also, you know, the learning of what we're going to talk about each and every week on the podcast. But, you know, one of the things that you have to understand, I think, about short selling is that and market corrections, they're could be a lot deeper and faster. But there is always a larger bunch of buyers out there that are looking mm-hmm. to find bargains and for those things like the, you know, 50-day, 20-day, 10-day or 10 bar or whatever you want to call it, moving average or a particular level and say, hey, whoa, wow, that's a bargain at this point. And there's a lot more of those that are always willing to put their money in
yes.
for that quick pop. And therefore, shorting becomes there's a whole different way of looking at things in terms of how you have to play that situation. And, you know, if you see a stock down, you know, for the most part, I think if somebody sees a stock down 25% on the day, right, right off the bat mm-hmm. in the morning, right, I think most people are like, well, if I short, it's probably done already.
Right. You missed the opportunity.
So, yeah. You know, I'm going to go long. If a stock is way up, most people are like, wow, it's going up and it's going higher.
Fear of missing out.
Right.
Jump
it. So jump it. So you got two sides of it already on the buy side, no matter what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So you're 100% right. I agree with you. And I think that is just systemically, the market is biased to the long side and people are biased to the long side. I mean, historically, if you put money into the market almost any time in the last, you know, whatever, since the U.S. market began, you made money. So being short side long term has never worked. But for short term opportunities, there are for sure traders who really like that. Obviously, when you have a stock like DRYS last year that went from a dollar up to
100
or whatever it was, you know, up to $100 a share, that provides a huge opportunity to the short side. So, you know, there people made money on both sides. And I suppose the few people that had shares available to borrow and that got the timing right, I'm sure they made a killing, but gosh,
That was a quick one. And that thing keeps on splitting and reverse splitting.
Yeah, it does.
And it's down at like 50 cents. The whole company has a market cap of like $3 million. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, but that's a topic for another show. Let me just mention that, that Ross has a webinar, which we will put actually a link on the Discipline Investor podcast page for this show, episode number 518. Title of the webinar is How I Made Over $100,000 Plus in Verified Profits Day Trading Part-Time in 45 Days. You can go to webinar.warriortrading.com/signup.
Yeah.
So I'm sure anywhere on your site you could find that, by the way.
Yeah,
And here's the good news. By signing up for the webinar and attending, everybody that attends will receive a copy of Ross's best-selling book, How to Day Trade. Let's see. As a special gift, Ross buys every attendee a digital copy of the How to Trade. Oh, $43 Amazon retail.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What a special guy you are. I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, but Andrew, you missed the most exciting part, which is that I started January 1st with $583 in my account.
When I missed that? Where was that? I didn't see that.
And in 44 days, I hit $100,000. That was the part that was so crazy. I mean, $100,000 in 44 days is, that's respect.
Well, it's one thing making $100,000 on $100,000.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. It's another thing entirely making $100,000 on peanuts.
Yeah. So I started with $583. And over the course, you know, the first week and a half was making like $100 a day. I was using leverage. Yeah. I was being obviously as aggressive as I possibly could. But that was, I mean, it was really, I think I was fortunate because January, February, and early March were just really good for trading. Things have slowed down a little bit, you know, as we got into the late spring, early summer. But so that webinar will be a lot of fun. Yeah, we're giving away a copy of my best-selling book.
Well, that's great. We'll have, again, the link on the website. We'll promote it. Do you have, do you have a Twitter handle?
Yeah, Day Trade Warrior.
Day Trade Warrior. All right, we'll make sure to promote this for you. And I wish you the best of luck. We'll talk again soon. And if you want information on TradeStation, by the way, talk to me separately. I'll get you hooked up with the right people, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, day trading has changed over the years so greatly. You know, we've seen a move since, I'll call it the late 90s into the early 2000s, where you had spreads that were pretty wide and you were able to really do a good job at day trading because you'd be trading against another person or another party. And then it changed over the last number of years where they really squeezed down and compressed down the spreads. And then, of course, you have the algos, the robots, the machines, whatever you want to call them, that you're trading against. And it's changed a bit. You have to learn and be able to have a very quick sense about you, not in terms of trading, but in terms of being able to adjust your trading style as things change these days. So if you are interested in that and it's part of, by the way, day trading, swing trading, buy and hold, diversification, asset allocation, algo trading, all of that can be part and probably should be part of a diversified portfolio approach. Diversification is not only the act of, let's say, utilizing different sectors and different capitalization sizes and stocks versus bonds and real estate and some commodities. Diversification also in a portfolio is dealing with trading styles and trading ranges. So you may have a portfolio that you consider your long-term core strategy that may be, let's call it a buy and hold to a degree, you know, not a buy and hope, but a buy and hold portfolio that is well diversified along many different industries and sectors and sizes and types and domestic and international, et cetera. But what about, you know, having a different entire trading mechanism to either enhance or diversify, we'll call it, that portfolio, and that could be your day trading or your swing trading strategy. Now, whether you do it yourself or you hire somebody to do it, or you utilize maybe in a different kind of structure, whether it's a hedge fund, a portfolio manager, or maybe even a fund of sorts that does that kind of thing, or you do it yourself, still, that helps to diversify the portfolio and it helps to diversify you against, you know, major downturns. Maybe there is a portion of your portfolio that not only do you go long, but you go short, maybe use options, et cetera. And maybe that portfolio can actually do well in a market that's either going nowhere, let's say, or possibly going against your other portfolio strategy. So that's something to think about. Something that I think a lot of people in my industry don't think about that much. They're so stuck on one particular way of doing things that they don't realize that there's a lot of different ways to skin the same cat, so to speak. So you want to look at different ways in which to invest and to help diversify. So just something to think about. All right, let me talk about what we had mentioned before we got to our guest today, which was some of the earnings that are coming up this week. And I just want to go through some of this to keep you aware, because it's a pretty big week of numbers that will be coming out from many companies. A lot of companies that will be reporting this week. Starting on Monday, we have Google, or Alphabet, if you want to call them. We have Halliburton, Stanley Black & Decker. We have also the June home sales on Monday. Tuesday, we have the conference board coming out with their consumer index and earnings from companies like 3M, AT&T, Amgen, Biogen, Caterpillar, Chipotle, which, by the way, is the closest to the pin game this week, or this last couple of weeks, for DH Unplugged. I believe you have until the end of this week to put in your price guess for Chipotle and what it would be. And we all know what's going on with Chipotle with regard to the norovirus and this whole issue with rodents that we've recently found out about. We also have Domino's Pizza, Express Scripts. Domino's being Frank Curzio is one of his favorites that he talked about in his most recent podcast that I was on, or he was on with on our show. And I went back and forth. I was on his, he was on mine. We got some home builders like Pulte coming out. We got Super Value, Texas Instruments, U.S. Steel. U.S. Steel, don't forget, dropped off a cliff last time they came out with earnings. Fed Reserve's coming out with a policy statement on Wednesday. We're going to look at June home sales as well on Wednesday. Also coming out with earnings is Boeing, Coca-Cola. We have, let me go down this list here, Corning, D.R. Horton, another home builder. Facebook, that'll be a big one. Ford. Be watching that to see what's going on with the automobile companies, the traditional automobile companies in the U.S. We have Gilead Sciences, PayPal, Rent-A-Center, Rockwell Automation, really cool company. Let's see, Waste Management, West Marine, Whirlpool. West Marine was recently bought, so let's kind of scratch that. Whirlpool will be coming out. That stock got hit last week after Amazon announced they have a partnership with Sears selling the Kenmore brands of appliances on their site. We saw Whirlpool and Lowe's and Home Depot get hit on that. It's kind of once a week we got to get the Amazon hit. And then we have Whole Foods coming out, which Amazon recently bought. We also have initial claims coming out. Hard good orders appear on Thursday. Earnings from, who's interesting here? Baidu, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Dr. Pepper Schnapple, Dunkin' Brands, Expedia, Intel, Procter & Gamble. Spirit Airlines, Starbucks, Twitter. That's going to be interesting to watch Twitter. UPS. And then we're going to see University of Michigan's final sentiment index for the month. And we're going to see the first estimate of quarter two's GDP on Friday. And we're going to see Exxon, Chevron, and American Airlines, Merck, hit the tape in terms of their earnings. So there's a big week coming up. I'm kind of curious to watch what's going to go on with Bitcoin also. Last week hit about 1,810 at the low last Sunday. And today's approaching 2,800 again. So about a 1,000-point lift off of the low due to a ruling that's going to go on with regarding to a split of the way the mining's done and possibly how there's going to be some trading issues to speed up trading and to speed up order execution on Bitcoin. Kind of fascinating what's going on with that particular cyber currency. We'll watch that. I mentioned earlier, the audiobook is available, The Disciplined Investor. That's the first book that I wrote. You can go over to Amazon or Audible and grab that book. If you want to listen to some of the ways that we look at what we call fundamental investing, quantitative investing, technical investing, we talk about GICs or annuities in there as well. We talk about a variety of different styles, how to find stocks, the very basics, the very core of how you actually go about looking for the finest stocks that are out there and also building a portfolio. It's an easy read. I actually, on the audiobook, I actually went and I did the audio. I was the reader. I was the commentator, if you will, on that. They asked me to do that. So I said, sure. And that was not easy, by the way. That was not an easy process, but it was rewarding. I think it came out pretty good. But if you want to grab that, you can do so. And of course, if you're interested in any of the strategies that we run, I would encourage you to do so. And you can find out more. There's a quick virtual tour of video on the Discipline Investor Managed Growth Strategy, a hedging strategy where we have a core position of equities. We have Arrow in there to a degree. We also have a hedge and alpha generation part of the portfolio. All that's available, and you can check it all out on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, plus the Investology and the global allocations and Arrow. All that's there. Anyway, we're going to wrap it up there. I want to thank you for joining me. We're going to see you again next week. We have some great guests coming up over the next few weeks, so stick around. We're going to be coming right back next week with more. Thanks a lot.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.